This is the Tribe Tech Podcast, in collaboration with Stephen Scone. You can get in touch with us by tweeting TechSWOfficial.
Hello and welcome to the Tech Southwest Podcast, Tribe Tech. I'm Fayaza Khan and I'm with Robert Hillier. Today we're in sunny Bournemouth. It's actually quite sunny today, which we're very lucky to do. And we're with Amy and Nigel from People Matter. We're talking about the health and well-being of the workplace and how important it is, especially in the tech sector. We'd love to know your thoughts about this. And before we carry on, just want to say, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast. Amy, Nigel, welcome.
Hello. Thanks for having us.
It's good to be able to host you down in sunny Bournemouth.
Well, it's lovely. I really love where you guys are. This is a really nice space, actually.
I love it.
I think Eagle Labs, without wanting to plug for Eagle Labs, they are sort of an unknown resource, really. There's 26, I think, or 27 of them around the country. Got coverage across the whole of the UK and up in Scotland. I think the most northern ones in Aberdeen.
Right. It's really good. They run events. We're doing an AI frenzy. So we'll be doing a talk on the role of AI in the context of the human. And yeah, everyone here's lovely. Lots of connections. They've helped open a few doors for us as well, which has been really good.
It's now the biggest co-working space network in, I wouldn't say Europe, but it might not be, certainly in the UK.
How does it help a company like yours to be with other people in a building like this? How does it benefit?
So I think there's a few different levels that it works on. I think having a nice space that's secure, because we're working with some quite secure data, so we can't just be in a public open space. So I think it works on that level. It works because there's a number of companies here and you bump into them and there's that sociable element to it. But it also works, I think, that Barclays have done quite a clever job at hooking other bits of their sort of world into the startup world. So we work with high growth people from the Barclays banking team that we probably wouldn't get access to if we weren't here. We did something with an organisation called Capital Enterprise a few weeks ago, some investor forum. So there's a few different things, and as Amy mentioned, they have events here fairly regularly in terms of different themes around AI. There's a wellbeing one as well.
The fact that there are so many other companies here and that you're constantly collaborating or networking or just having a coffee with someone, not even for work, that does add to the wellbeing of a workplace, doesn't it?
It does. I mean, you bump into people as you walk in, everyone's super friendly, they come say hello. But also, just going back to the theme of wellbeing and events, tonight I think there's actually a mental health for men event. It's like a really nice informal networking thing, and it's focused on, for small businesses and for men in business, how do you informally just connect over a topic? You don't have to talk about anything, but it's just a way of bringing awareness and helping people to just, you know, not be on their own and to meet new people. And part of that can be business and part of that can be just getting to know people in the local area. There's a lunchtime Wednesday dip in the sea, which again is just for fun, but just to get
that
to
sounds amazing
all year round.
Yeah, every
week.
Wow.
Which
that
is
amazing.
I think I'm with you on this.
Yeah, I'm trying to rally the troops. I think I've got 5 or 6 people now in the People Matter network. You guys are welcome. Anyone else who's listening,
which
you're
day
welcome.
Is it? I'm coming.
Wednesdays. Yeah, just 5 minutes, run in, like get the senses going. It's meant to be really good for your mental health. It's a bit of fun. Doesn't take too long.
I can't do it in Bournemouth, but I can do it remotely.
Yeah. Yes.
And then just let you know.
Maybe this should be a thing.
Yeah.
Every Wednesday we'll get different areas around the country doing.
Yeah.
They've actually called it hashtag wet Wednesdays, which is an interesting name. Wellbeing Wednesdays, I think, works.
Yeah.
But,
I'll try and find something equally unpleasant to do.
Yeah.
At the same time.
Please share it.
In sympathy. Maybe just sort of stab a fork into my leg.
I guess it could have a similar effect.
But tell me more about People Matter and how you came up with the idea.
So this was over about 2 years ago now, wasn't it? And we had a really happy collision, which was created by a mutual contact. She knew Nigel. He had a few ideas around how we use tech for good and the role of data. And how we can use that to get a better read of our mental health. And I came at it very much from the fact that burnout has been this growing epidemic. There's a lot of stress, and there's a lot more awareness now around mental health, but there just was a lack of real technology tools and a scalable way to address it within the workplace. So that was back in December 2017, and by the beginning of 2018 we decided to go for it and set People Matter up, really.
So was it that meeting that unlocked that final bit that was missing from the idea you had and what you wanted to do? And it was that meeting that meant, okay, but I can see a way of making this happen now. I can see that final piece.
Yes.
That can,
but basically,
can pull this together.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, basically, my idea was we could use data for a better purpose than trying to sell us things or to be monetized. So, and there's all this data that we throw off every day. Why can't we use that to help us as individuals? But I didn't really have anything beyond that other than a few examples of companies that we're using data. Then I just thought, well, if it's being used for that, couldn't it be used for this?
Mm-hmm.
And then what Amy provided was that framework of, okay, this is actually how we could use data. And that morphed into this concept of your digital self and your subjective self, which has become a core principle, really, of People Matter and what we're delivering. And it's become a differentiator for us. So this concept of when you use an app, you have a subjective self-view, you have a view of how you think you feel, but then there's this digital view of actually what's really going on in your environment and in your world, and actually those two things together are quite powerful. If you start to bring them together, you can get a view that's really interesting.
And so from the psychologist's point of view, how do you weigh those
mm-hmm.
things up? I mean, do you give them equal weight, or are you able to explain to people that you may think you feel like this, but actually I can tell you that you probably feel like this? How does it actually work?
Yeah, so there's a couple of things. So people have found it really insightful and really a curious idea that they have a subjective experience of how it's feeling. So how I experience a given busy, stressful day will be completely different to, say, Nigel, and we'll have different triggers as to what we think are stressful aspects of our day. And that's a very real experience. It's not something that you want to take away. So being able to reflect, report and see that is good, because you start to get to know your personal triggers and what's interesting to your personality and your values. But then what becomes interesting is being able to bring more tangibility around actually what were the series of events, you know, how much was I really working that day, what sort of meetings have I had, what sort of people have I been talking to, and they're all clues that help you understand that subjective experience as to why you feel that way. Our memories are quite unreliable sometimes, and we think, we know often how we feel, but how our environment's really impacting that and shaping that over time, we tend to be quite passively thinking about that throughout our day-to-day. So we allow people to see both sides, so you can see your subjective self and your digital self.
So that may appear to be
mm-hmm.
hyper-individual.
Yes.
But presumably you have to make it not that, and you have to be able to use that data and that scaling to see patterns
yeah.
within it to make it work,
yeah.
don't you? So is that how it starts to become easier when, because obviously, you know, we think we're different, but actually you're
yeah.
presumably finding out that we're not, and some of those triggers are quite similar, and some of those
yes.
ways of thinking about ourselves is
yeah.
fairly similar. Is that when it starts to work, that the more data you've got, actually the more that you find
yeah.
how similar we are, as opposed to how
yeah.
people need that
yeah.
personal intervention?
Yeah, it's a fascinating space, because ultimately, as soon as you start to apply a model, you can start to see broad trends. So if you have long working hours, lots of conflict in your day, you don't feel supported, and I don't know, you have a lack of control, then you are more likely to be at risk of burning out, let's say. And if that's over a sustained period, the model provides us with that aggregate view as to typically what the dynamics are and what the thresholds are to say you're on a good healthy spiral, or actually you could be moving down this kind of downward spiral. So a model and the masses of data allow us to see those big relationships over time.
A Tech Southwest podcast, talking tech in the Southwest.
The big shift that we think needs to happen is your individual experience is still really important, and whilst there are known trends, we also have our own perception of a given day, and we also have our own value set, and that mismatch or that alignment between who we are and our environment based on what's has a bigger weighting. You know, I might experience conflict to be a much bigger impact to me based on my experience or my background and my values to someone like Nigel. So the personalization, that's where machine learning and technology and AI has so much potential, because it can start to know, well, what's your baseline, what's your patterns, and therefore what could your personal triggers and personal weightings could be in that model. So we balance those two things together in what we do. What's the kind of broad view versus the really hyper personalization? And the final part there is content. You know, what's the personalized advice, tips, and approach for you versus someone else? And today there's just not enough of that. You know, we have to search.
How is that data inputted? How do you get all that information about each person? And then also, you know, for example, you said that when they look through their data, their memory won't be reliable, but the app will be able to tell them what kind of person they've met in the day, etc. How is all of that? How do you get that?
Masses of data exist on us every day, like Nigel said. So so over the last 12 months, we have run a specific research project looking at three core types of data. One is just looking at your digital communication patterns. So if you consent, you don't have to at all, you're completely private, you can't be seen by anyone but yourself. We can look at your digital working patterns based on your email trends in a given day, when you're logging on, who you're emailing, what time. So there's lots of organisational network analysis, and that gives you a pattern of that digital data. You then have aspects which is, so what's happening, who you're employed by. Again, nothing is about one silver bullet as to what that means. It's the aggregate of these different data points. And then we're building onto that many other sources that can hook into that. You know, are you being bombarded with notifications every day? How much are you picking up your phone? Your digital fitness data can feed into that, your sleep data. All of this, it plays a picture of your life. At this point, we've validated our models based on primarily the email communication and calendar data. And the final part is the subjective data, which is, you do log into the app, you can then answer questions and reflect on how is it really feeling, how would you rate your pressures, and that again helps build further validation on what we do. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
cool. So one of our challenges has been to be focused and deliver something, like deliver a product, because as Amy said, there's literally hundreds of different sources you could take, and your mind can run away with all the different things we could hook into. So our first research partner was Experian, and that's who we're rolling out to at the moment in terms of our first customer. And almost by chance, really, with them, we started working with Microsoft Data. So that's become our sort of first digital self input, if you like. And actually, in the last month, we've had some really exciting developments with Microsoft that we're almost allowed to talk about. I think we're basically on a global incubation program for using data out of Office 365. So it's like a really cool thing. We're going over to
That's amazing.
We're going over to Redmond and Seattle next month to talk to them a bit more about. So that's it. Microsoft are really interested in this area as well. Obviously, I don't know if you use Microsoft, you might have started to get these My Analytics emails that come through every day. So which basically say, it looks like it's quite basic what they provide, but I think it shows a direction of travel for Microsoft to thinking about how this data can be used to help you as an individual and your well-being. So for us, layering our model on top of that is quite interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's providing a really good focus area for us, certainly this year, in terms of what we're doing.
So Tribe Tech listeners will be sort of familiar with you guys, because we've featured you in our second episode where we were at the Tech Southwest Awards. But I wonder how you use your own app in your own lives and in your own business. I mean, do you?
Yeah, so the exciting thing is we all have it on our phones. We are using it, we're testing it, and we're the first guinea pigs to say, how is this adding value and how do we improve our own product, which we love. So we're constantly coming up with new ideas, which is great, but there's a bunch of features as a library content that then gets tailored to us. So
I think one of the unique things about it is that you don't tell people what to do. You say, this is what's happening.
Yeah.
And then they have to make their own decisions, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's this combination of taking personal responsibility, but also within an organisation, creating an environment where it's acceptable to talk about mental health. So when you talked about do we use the app, I think also within People Matter there's an awareness of getting a business off the ground of this type. I mean, it's incredibly stressful and difficult, and it's like an unspoken, people are starting to speak about it now, but it was an unspoken thing around entrepreneurship about how difficult it is and how lonely it is and how it really takes its toll on people. And I think doing something this challenging in an environment where we're taking mental health really seriously has been really interesting. And it's been, you know, for me, I've done a couple of other businesses in the past, and it's interesting doing something where you're able to talk much more openly about how you're feeling and whether you're really struggling on a particular day or whatever.
How do you factor in though the fact that, as you say, there are days when you are going to be stressed. It is going to be tough. You are going to feel a little bit isolated. You are going to feel overworked. You are going to be bombarded with emails. How do you know when that's enough and how much of that is part of the natural flow of having to make a success of the business and getting that adrenaline and getting that rush, and you can't sleep, but you can't sleep because your head's full of ideas and that you want to get up and you want to start the day.
And sometimes it's positive as well, isn't it?
Do we know ourselves well enough to know how to take the positive from that, but also know that enough is enough? I suppose what I mean is taking a 2-minute question into 30 seconds. Can burnout happen overnight, or is it something which you can always see is a gradual build up to that snap?
Got it. So specifically around burnout, it's a funny phenomenon because it isn't, you don't go from zero to burnout. It emerges very gradually over time, and often it's not a surprise, but people talk of this moment that they have a breakdown or they can't cope anymore. And that's when you get people who really have to take time out and recover properly. But there's lots of stages of burnout before it gets to that point. So what I'd say is you might get a given day where you think you're okay, but there's been this ongoing kind of pressure and stress that actually you kind of know, but you don't think about. You're just tolerating it and coping with it. You found ways to get around it and perform. That you might have a day, a week where it just hits you because it's like the hair on the camel's back type scenario. But it's very different to stress. So stress is much more, I'm on adrenaline, I've got some anxiety, and it spurs you to act. So you might have moments of overwhelming stress and anxiety, and panic even. But that's very different to burnout, which is exhaustion. Like you've got to the point where you've become disconnected, you're not feeling yourself at all, it's quite a lonely, empty space, and you've got nothing left in the tank. Part of our journey and part of this is knowing and accepting and embracing sometimes today is just a crazy day, right? And what's quite nice is we'll ring each other up and one of us will have a day where we're like, oh, and another one is just kind of in a different energy state, and that support really helps. But we have to keep ourselves in check quite a lot, don't we? Which is, are we pushing ourselves too far too soon sometimes? Because you can do it for a period of time, but then it can become unsustainable. And it's learning that balance that becomes really key between stress and difficulty and dealing with your emotions in a given day, given week, versus we're burning out and it's too much and it's too far. But still, it's completely personal, and obviously it can be much deeper. That would be the psychologist's answer, I guess, to stress and burnout.
And do you think, Nigel, from your previous experience, that this is understood by chief executives and HR managers, that in terms of how you measure the success of your employees? And I've worked in companies like this, you know, there's a kind of battle of how stressed and how tired you are is seen as a badge of honour.
So I think I think things are changing, definitely. In fact, we've noticed a change since starting People Matter, so in 2 years. Having said that, I think, and it's interesting, we're just looking at our next funding round at the moment. We're looking at how we're positioning our business, we're looking at what the growth opportunities are for us. And we're focusing in on mission-driven companies that are growing quite quickly, that really understand the value of having a group of people that are operating together, that are happy, that are fulfilled. And that's not every organisation that really believes that and really wants that for the people that work for them. You'd struggle to find an HRD or a CEO that said they actively wanted their people to be unhappy.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a big difference between that and people that really get what we're doing.
Mm. And I suppose how they as individuals also measure their own
success,
happiness, isn't
yeah.
it? And if that is measured by their profit and loss account, then...
One data point, I know he's not everyone's cup of tea, but I followed him for a number of years, Gary Vaynerchuk.
Mm.
In his weekly V, he's just changed from doing a daily blog to a weekly one. His weekly one last week, he talked about having a down day, not feeling his best. Now, this is the ultimate positive person, and I just thought it was fascinating. He took 3 minutes out of his weekly blog to say... For him, it was, I was a B minus, I wasn't an A. His take was, I didn't feel great, I recognised I didn't feel great, I didn't beat myself up for it. I realised that it would pass and I feel better today, but I didn't get into a loop of, I should feel better.
Yeah.
So it was just, I just thought it was interesting as someone that's often derided for being overly positive.
Because often I feel it can be treated slightly glibly, but do you think when people like Tyson Fury and top footballers do start talking openly, that it does genuinely make a difference to people within the business world, that they feel
I think it
more
definitely
comfortable?
Does. I think Tyson Fury is a fantastic example of someone who's really raised the level of awareness around mental health.
He would benefit from the app, no doubt.
He probably would. And even, you know, even we talked about football before we started the podcast, but even their Heads Up campaign, you know, all the Premier League footballers wore that on their shirts last week or the week before. So I just think it's about creating an environment where people feel comfortable talking about mental health. It's not something that's going to happen overnight. Also, I mean, this is again going to develop over time, but things like this wonderful office that we're in at the moment, having this type of environment for people, what's the impact of that on people's mental health? We can start to sort of give indicators around, you know, these 1,000 people that are based in this type of office environment and these 1,000 people that are based in maybe a more dingy office or they're expected to travel a long distance to get in. All those sort of factors, we can start to see the impact of those and model them, play them through.
This is the Tribe Tech Podcast in collaboration with Stephen Scone. You can get in touch with us by tweeting TechSWOfficial.
That was Nigel Winship speaking to us on People Matter, and he was with his co-founder Amy King. They're based in Bournemouth. They had quite an interesting take on mental health and well-being in the workplace. In our next part of the podcast, we'll have them back on. And
we delve a bit deeper, don't we, into the real business and the way that businesses are changing the way they look at health and well-being.
And how receptive they are. How they measure
success, not just by the profit and loss sheet.
But before that, just to take a little interlude, let's speak to Rafaela Ferns from Plotty. Now, Rafaela is quite an interesting human being. She is a businesswoman and co-founder of a seed swapping business. But before that, she had lots of jobs in London, and then for her own health and well-being, she decided to move to Cornwall. She got a tree chainsaw license, which I think is quite fun. And then decided, actually, I just want to have my own business. And is now part of the Launchpad program, which is part of Falmouth University.
Yeah, but she stayed focusing outdoors, isn't she? So she's not felling trees, but she is involved in seed swapping. She's even called Ferns.
So she couldn't
be more focused on the outdoor life if she tried.
So we started our chat with Rafaela by asking her a little bit more about Plotty and what it is it actually does.
Plotty is looking at the food security potential of connecting lots of small gardens together and non-commercial growers. So rather than food security being about kind of big monocultures and experts and plant scientists and things like that, we've kind of spotted the potential in linking together lots of individuals and small growers and the power that everybody can learn off each other. But also we're an online digital seed bank. So it's all about getting lots of individuals to save seeds and start swapping amongst each other. So there's similar things kind of happening on, there's a few seed swaps going on Instagram and Facebook, but there was nothing custom built. So we've kind of worked with DEFRA to get the sign off that we educate people about plant disease, invasive species and protected species to make sure people are doing it the right way. And then also build this kind of big digital community around people saving seeds, exchanging them and growing their own food. So that hopefully we can help everybody scale up and just make a start at growing their own food to improve food security among kind of urban gardeners and millennial gardeners, and just people that want to start with the kind of friendly gateway.
It's a great project because I love that you guys grow watermelons in Cornwall and pineapples and things that you wouldn't think would grow here, and then you get
there's
to...
There's a microclimate. There's palm trees in Falmouth.
Yeah, see, there is a microclimate, but there's still things growing here that you think, actually, what on earth? How are you getting that? Little tiny kiwi fruit, what are they called? Cucamelons?
Cucamelons, kiwi berries. So I think because we're a consumer-facing brand, we kind of need to get in the cute and charismatic crops like cucamelons to get people excited. So if people only have a small balcony, or there's this new word called a yarden, which is where if people live in the city, they don't really have a proper garden, it's just kind of a few paving slabs. But kind of help people.
We have a yarden.
They're great. Love a yarden. But people have limited space.
What would you recommend? What's the most popular thing to grow in your yarden?
You can try out cucamelons. You can try tomatillos. Watermelons would probably take over. But you can grow a few different trees and containers. So it depends if you're looking to grow for kind of interest and novelty. Or if you're kind of looking for a fruit tree, like yuzu's really fun. It's potentially our only domestic supply of a citrus, and it's got 3 times the vitamin C of a lemon, and it tastes amazing. And they're grown in the mountains of Japan, but in Cornwall they can grow here because they're frost hardy to minus 10.
I've seen that on your Instagram actually.
Yeah.
Yuzu.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is that uncalled, are they?
Yes.
So I suppose you have to work outside quite a lot, and that's quite good for your health and well-being, but then you've got to travel quite a bit as well to seed swap and seed sharing events, and then meeting people, all that traveling. How do you make sure that you take care of your health and well-being while working?
One thing I I do burn out because I give a lot, but I actively sought out and built a support network in Cornwall. So kind of in other places I've lived and other places I've had kind of good careers and stuff, I did burn out, but I came to Cornwall because actually it took me to get into 27 and being like, screw this whole lone wolf going out there and making it, that's awful. I need family, I need a community, and that stability. I think that's quite a big step. It's almost defeatist being like, actually I need people, but I would not have been able to do anything that I've done with Plotty or anything like that I've done here without having that.
Do you feel now has there been a generational change that there's just more awareness and understanding of the need to look after yourself in that way, that you can kind of say to people, look, I'm not really feeling great today, or I need a bit of support today, or I'm finding this situation is making me a bit anxious today, without being judged as, you know, being weak or a loser.
Yeah.
People are just a bit more accommodating.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of kind of post-trauma from Thatcher and kind of that idea of success. You know, she had these quotes, if you find yourself at 26, I can't remember what the age was, on a train without a house, a car and a wife or something, you should consider yourself a failure.
Yeah, it's a bus, actually.
Yeah, a bus.
Yeah.
And so she really kind of set this standard of this is what you should be, this is what you should be doing, and the nuclear family and all of that. And so people, if they were unemployed, they wouldn't go out because they'd be so ashamed, and that kind of led to kind of people being very isolated and living quite isolated lives. Whereas actually, if you are unemployed, it's really important to go out and get involved in community gardens and things like that, not shut yourself away with shame. So I think now people, yeah, I think the onus is definitely swapping to, like, millennials want jobs with impact, and wanting to do things that are good for you and good for the world. So I think people are definitely getting more open.
And so part of that old British character of stiff upper lip,
yeah,
don't talk about your feelings.
Yeah.
Don't show any emotion. Don't complain if your meal's not good enough.
Mm.
I suppose it doesn't mean anything to people of your age because you didn't grow up in that world, did you?
It does. You still obviously come up against things like that. I think as a woman especially, I've got to be really careful about complaining, because if you complain, you get called things like bossy, you get told you're whinging. So complaining is the one thing that I'm like, I really have to make sure that I'm not going to get accused of being oversensitive, that I'm not going to get confused with whinging. So I think learning about being assertive and learning how to be direct and get your point across in an effective way and try and get emotion out of it as much as possible has been a skill set that I've had to teach myself, so that I can say what I need but without that being at the detriment of my career or putting myself up for scrutiny of being over-emotional and things like that.
Do you find that as well, then, that you have to cope with the sexism as well as the looking after your mental health?
Everybody calls me bossy, but that's because I'm not willing to, well, sugarcoat it. And but, you know, right now I don't care, but I think when I was younger, it bothered me quite a lot.
Mm-mm.
And I don't think that it's fair that women have to deal with that, but I do think that's a different podcast.
Yeah.
Do you want me to go or?
I know you can. But how do you make sure that when you're starting a business,
mm-mm,
that you have these ideals in place already? How do you make sure that right now your business is quite small, but when it grows,
mm-mm,
are there ideas that you have to ensure that all your employees are able to maintain a work-life balance?
Mm-mm. One of the stereotypes I really want to bust, and I think it's a really harmful stereotype, is this kind of pervasive idea of what kind of a programmer is and what a tech person is. It's someone that sits and codes in their bedroom every night and doesn't have the best social skills and doesn't go out and interact with people. And I think that becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, because then people are like, oh, I'm like that, I'm going to do that. And then you find yourself in the sector working with lots of people that don't have any social skills, don't communicate with you, and that can be quite lonely and isolating.
Yeah.
And I think for women that want to go into tech, they're actually put off by that. They're like, well, I'm not like that. I like to go out with my friends at the weekend, and, you know, do I have to be the type of person that sits in my bedroom and codes for my entire teenage years in order to be into tech?
Yeah.
And so I think that definitely in future employing programmers, I'm going to look for programmers with social skills. I think that's really important. And yeah.
Because also, work is a home away from home,
yeah,
isn't it? So you do have to have, well, social interactions. It's,
yeah,
it's just as important as interactions elsewhere.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I mean, a bad cashier at the till, if you go into a supermarket or something, who's just doesn't smile or anything, it puts you off your day for a few hours. You're like, why did that person... what was wrong with them? But obviously they're dealing with something, and it just, the whole thing is a domino effect. So yeah, absolutely.
And what employers say they want, I mean, more and more, is people who can work in teams,
mm-mm,
people who can solve problems,
yeah,
can collaborate, can be part of that creative process. And so why has that not filtered down, do you think, and people still think of the programming world as something that's quite a kind of lonely, isolated existence, when it shouldn't be, should it? The best ideas come from that collaboration, that ability to share and to...
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you feel, as somebody who's been out of university for sort of five or 6 years, it's the only world you've known really is the kind of this modernity, when we've never been so connected, and we've never had an ability to be in touch with so many people at the same time, but it seems to have coincided with people feeling more lonely and isolated than ever before. Why do you think that what's happened is almost the opposite of what you would have anticipated happening? Why do you think so many young people are now struggling, when in fact they've never had so much access to so many friends and content and things to do? How has that come about?
I think a lot of it comes down to the fact that it's so hard just to kind of live and pay rent these days. So, like, when I was in London, I was doing three different jobs at the same time just to pay rent. So then I was just kind of either too exhausted to go out and see my friends in the evenings, and kind of drinking culture as well. Like, you can't really afford to have a hangover, because if you're off your game at work, if you lose that job, it's going to be so hard to find another one. Normally you see your parents and you're like, oh great, that set a benchmark, I want to do that. And so people have seen what their parents are doing, you know, their mortgages and houses in their early 20s, and they had one job and they just stuck at that. So as we're seeing that and we're growing up with that, but it's unattainable for a lot of us.
And I wonder if it also means that we should probably change the benchmark then. So maybe we should just move and adapt. So rather than think, okay, fine, we need a mortgage, maybe we should think, actually, renting culture, there's nothing wrong with that, because they do it in Europe. It's not the end of the world. And they manage quite successfully. We can protect ourselves mentally as well.
Yeah.
Why do you think that is happening? Because one hears, and you can sort of tell me this is true or not, that young people are now less focused on stuff and more focused on experiences, and how also social media may have driven them.
I think there's a tension because we're still aspirational and we'd still like all of that. But obviously, with the rise of the sharing economy, you know, really exciting things have happened. We can't afford hotels, for example, but then Airbnb's come up and that's amazing, it's great. We would like an all right car and things like that, but yeah, it's fine because then you just find other ways, you know, to kind of like board game cultures picking up a bit like that. So kind of people are going to each other's houses in the week. I don't know whether it's just because I'm in the echo chamber, but, you know, playing things like Settlers of Catan. And
so that cafe that I said it won't be here in 3 months the other day because it does board games.
Mm-mm.
I'm wrong.
Mm-mm.
That's why I'm not in that business.
So that's kind of picking up because people are acknowledging that we do need the social interaction, but it doesn't necessarily have to be around drinking. So kind of Brewdog, I think, in Old Street, that they've just opened up an alcohol-free bar. So I think we're really recognising that actually we do need each other, and it's not weakness to need each other.
You're listening to Tribe Tech.
So that's Rafaela Ferns there, and reiterating really that point about the fact that we are part of something bigger, and you can't separate the social from the work.
No,
which
and
is
actually,
what we were talking about before.
It's actually exactly what Amy King and Nigel Winship said when we were in Bournemouth. We're going to go back to Bournemouth now and speak to the co-founders of People Matter, and you actually asked them about forward-thinking business models compared to traditional business models, and how actually being forward-thinking and having a more flexible working practice is better for business.
If you look at what we might call forward-thinking companies, those decisions about new office design and open plan and flexible working and working from home, those are taken because ultimately they improve productivity and they increase retention.
Yeah.
So ultimately they are business decisions, aren't they? And, one of the UK's economic problems is our long hours and our low productivity.
Yeah.
Now, why is that? Well, if that can be demonstrated by every time you send an email on a Sunday afternoon at 2 and you sit there, I'm drumming my fingers for the benefit of the wondering why you haven't got a reply by 2:30, that's actually not benefiting your business, and here is that data to demonstrate that. Is that the ultimate success and kind of aim, that this isn't seen as something of a kind of a soft lifestyle choice to look after employees in this way? But it benefits you and it also benefits them, and ultimately it benefits the productivity of the economy as a whole.
Absolutely. There's two levers that we're working with. One is at that macro level, exactly what you said. So what's the impact of that happening 100 times in the business on a Sunday? Let's say if you have a business that employs 100,000 people, what's the impact of that? But then there's also, what's the impact on the individual of that? So what's the impact on you if you're getting that? And that's what's happening for you over, say, a 6-week period or an 8-week period. So we're working at these two levels, and we think both of them are important.
I think it's crazy how in some offices, people are expected to come in at 9 and then check out at 5. And sometimes, you know, they've probably finished with their work at 2. What on earth are you doing for 3 hours? You're just sitting there watching YouTube videos. What is the point?
Exactly. There is this whole thing, and I think this is what we're touching on, which is we've got real legacy structures and attitudes and systems to workplaces today. And this all started on this idea of, if we're really going to add value back to at the human level so that we can feel more fulfilled and be more on the path of our best self, and data being part of that, our environments and our organisations are a huge part of that. But they're set up in a way that's quite old school half the time, because you end up with employees just showing up and not feeling good, wasting everyone's time, not being productive, and then also not feeling good themselves. And the presenteeism cost to the UK economy alone is huge. So there's an economic cost, but there's also a huge shift that I think we're starting to make within workplaces and attitudes, which is actually how do we show up and how do we do work that we love, be productive of and that we can be our best at. And it is linked to our mental health. It is linked to how we feel about ourselves. So our mission is to be progressive. We talk a lot about the poor side of mental health and, you know, stress and burnout, but the whole principle is actually to be about the other end of the scale, which is how do we build workplaces that are sustainable, healthy, thriving, and how do we help the individual feel more empowered, more in control, so that we're not in that situation where we feel like we're having to show up and just go through the motions of our life or our work life.
You mentioned that there's tips in your app. These are some ways of counteracting how you've been working over the last few weeks, etc. What are those tips?
The tips are really varied. They're often really simple, practical things. If we are learning that an individual has a really poor work-life balance, and they value work-life balance, there's two data points there, then actually they need to start to adopt behaviours that help them better manage that work-life balance. There's a number of ways you can do that. One might be to set stricter boundaries. It might be your own management of your boundaries between work and home life that aren't there. So a tip might be try leaving work on time today. That could literally be one tip, and you might look at that and roll your eyes one day, but over time it's trying to get you thinking about the proactive things you can do that are simple and actionable that help you build those right healthy habits. So they're really simple, everyday, common sense things, to be honest, that you kind of might look at and say, well, that's obvious.
But
in our
reminders.
Busiest times, yeah, that's the thing. It's hard to prioritise, or you can forget and you're just working through your day blindly. How many of us feel guilty for taking time out for ourselves? We've got so many commitments running around to work, to home, to children, to everything. So it's just almost giving you an action but also permission to say you should be doing this, or you could be doing this, not should, that's the wrong word. And for some people, actually, they quite like the kind of daily affirmations and the mindset shift, which is about practice. So there's a lot of work now that shows that daily practices, whether it's gratitude, whether it's affirmations, visualization, just helps to change your frame. So it's trying to bring more consciousness to those two sides, really.
When we talked about we don't always have to be unhappy. You know, we actually can have days when we're happy as well. So when the data's telling us, maybe not unsurprisingly, that long hours and too many emails and other aspects which may be more surprising that feed into why we're not having a good day, are we also getting some indications of what makes us feel good? Is there some universal truths that if you do this, you are likely to feel better? Because you mentioned about, have you spoken to a friend and try and leave work early?
Yeah.
Are there things that we can all think about doing, which for the most part will have some benefit to us?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's been a lot of progressive work in the space of psychology, which shows that our mental health is hugely tied into our social world. We're social beings by nature. We used to live in tribes and we want to belong, we want to feel connected. We experience pain, social pain, the same way that we do physical pain in our neurocircuitry. So there's a lot of research now that shows that relationships, how we form, how we bond, how we feel safe, how we feel connected, is massively important to our mental well-being, which goes back to evolutionary psychology, but now is also being really demonstrated in our neuroscience, which is pretty universal in human beings. And whilst it's quite new, there's a lot of work now which also links to that, which is we have psychological needs. That sense of fulfillment, it's different to happiness. Like, we can have a good day, we can feel pleasure and joy and have fun, but that doesn't mean we feel really rooted and connected with our sense of being and our direction in life. So there's just certain things that if we don't have them, we're likely to struggle. Like, if we don't have autonomy, if we don't feel like masters of our own destiny, we're likely to over time disconnect and likely to feel quite helpless, actually.
Do you think 5 years ago there would have been an appetite for this, or do you think you've hit the market at the right time?
I think we've hit the market at the right time. I think it's still not fully there in terms of conversations that we're having with maybe larger organisations where we're like, well, they're not quite there yet. But then you'll have a conversation with another organisation and it'll be, they completely get it. So
the cultural change does seem to be happening so quickly.
Yeah,
definitely. And I think what's interesting about the scale-up world is, yes, it's hugely stressful, but also typically those teams are growing really quickly. There's a real war for talent still for certain roles and certain types of people. So attracting good people, retaining them, but also getting that group of people working together to achieve things is really important.
The temptation is to go down the productivity performance lens, and I think we're seeing there's just a different expectation now, particularly generational. And I think there's different challenges now as well. If you're a younger person and coming into the workforce and you're a digital native, you just have a different, completely different mindset to someone who grew up without the digital world. And it's not to put people in boxes, but then comes with that a different expectation at work as well, and how you expect to be supported, different challenges of how you experience work.
Just to end, I wonder what your top tips for, or at least one top tip, let's all do one, including you, Robert, for just staying sane in the workplace. Because for me, I'm a freelancer, so obviously I'm on my phone all the time, and it's social media, so a lot of times I'm updating other people's social media and then checking mine throughout the day. But my top tip would be, I only check my emails 5 times a day. And I will not answer or check them. And so if I wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning and do check an email, that's 1 time gone. And then I only have 4 times left.
Yeah.
And I do stick to that. And I have only started doing it for the last 3 months. It has made an enormous difference. Annoys some people because I haven't responded within their 10-minute time frame. But that's too bad.
Yeah.
What's yours?
So I think for me, it's build that group of people around you that you can talk to about how you're feeling.
So my challenge often is I get really immersed in what I'm doing and I can get carried away. And that means either I can not know when to stop or I'm never really switching off. So my tip would be set the boundaries that work for you. I have started literally putting my phone on flight mode and putting it in a drawer in another room. But I'll also set myself a time to stop.
Do you have any?
I've been going last.
Well, obviously, all of those. Physical activity, I think, is extremely important. I don't know what I'd do without it. And I certainly try and not be governed by what other people need me to do.
Mm.
So I often say, WAN, WAN, what's important now?
Mm.
Helps me remind myself, okay, well, I have got to do this today. The fact that person or that people would like me to do that today is not going to impact, and actually, because I felt an awful lot of the stress that comes from feeling overwhelmed is because of volume as opposed to actually importance.
Yeah.
And it's often the fact if you've been away for a week and you haven't checked your emails and you come back and you see all the things that had you been there would have caused you to do an awful lot of action and activity around the email, but a week later that matter has completely disappeared. Sometimes not doing anything is actually quite a good idea. And there you go, that's why my startups have never worked.
I like
try doing nothing. There you go.
Well, thank you very much for being part of the Tribe Tech podcast. It's been really lovely. I'm going to go and tour Bournemouth to take some photos.
Yeah.
That's going
to
be nice.
Go to the beach.
Well, thanks for listening to the Tribe Tech podcast. Please, please subscribe. We'd love you to keep listening and know when the next one's out.
Thank you, Stephen Scone, for supporting all of this.
Yep. Thanks, Stephen Scone.
You sound like yourself, like a man. Well.
Yeah.
Thanks, Steve.
Thanks. Cheers. Okay. Our next podcast actually is very interesting. We're going to be taking questions from all our Tribe Tech listeners. We want to know what kind of legal questions do you want to know about surrounding tech? And we're going to have a legal tech expert on with us from Stephen Scone. So get those in on Twitter or wherever else you want to. And don't email me because I only check them 5 times a day. So thanks so much for listening. Have a lovely day, whatever you're doing. And remember to be mindful.
A Tech Southwest podcast. In collaboration with Stephen Scone.